from KMXT in Kodiak. This is the first Alaska Fisheries Report of 2012. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, ASME changes its slogan in Japan and looks to South America as a potential customer. IFQs were one of the topics of the recent Lowell Wakefield Fishery Symposium. And a seasoned skipper writes a book of advice for greenhorns looking to break into Alaska fisheries. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute has recently changed its marketing plan and slogan for the Japanese market. That's because the old one, still in use elsewhere, didn't translate well. ASME Communications Director Tyson Fick in Juneau said that the problem has been known for some time.
So we've changed the tagline to a natural taste from Alaska. And that's been, we're pretty excited about that, and we can actually move forward building brand presence with our logo by having it be more relevant to the Japanese consumer. We had a little different strategy the last few years, and it was more about specific product promotions with partners and less about building our own logo and our own brand.
Fick said the old tagline, the decades-old wild, natural, sustainable, will continue to be used in America and elsewhere.
We're always reevaluating, and it was certainly some discussion within the industry of what's the next thing. That's something we're always looking towards. American consumers want fish from Alaska and everything that means, that it's cold and clear and beautiful and the high quality, great taste and very nutritious. And to associate that with wild, natural, and sustainable is just another icing on the cake.
Elsewhere in Asia, China last year became Alaska's biggest overseas trading partner with over $1 billion in exports through October, eclipsing Japan. A lot of the decrease in sales to Japan was from the ending of Cook Inlet natural gas shipments. A lot of the increase in China came in seafood, but Fick says it's not as simple as that.
The vast majority gets reprocessed and then exported, you know, some of it back to the United States, to the EU, and to Japan. So I suspect if you break down the numbers, you'd see that Japan is still our largest trading partner in terms of end consumers.
On the other side of the globe, ASME has recently opened a marketing office in Brazil, of all places.
I didn't know it until recently that a lot of the cod that we export to Norway, Spain, and Portugal gets reprocessed into salt cod, which then goes into Brazil and is the preferred cod, salted cod and desalted cod that's sold there because of its white color and real bright texture. So when you look at a place like Brazil with a growing middle class and a lot of fish consumers, we're excited to see how we can do with some of the other products from Alaska there.
Fick says another surprising foreign market that is emerging is the Ukraine, where loose salmon roe, known as ikura, is especially popular. Southeast Alaska's Dungeness crab catch this year topped 2.6 million pounds, one of the lowest harvests in decades. In most of the region, crabbers had full two-month summer and two-month fall seasons. The fall season closed at the end of November, and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's preliminary estimate for the fall harvest is 560,000 pounds, with 91 permit holders landing crab. That's similar to last year's catch. Adam Mesmer, Fish and Game's assistant management biologist for the shellfish program, says several areas were the top producers this fall.
District 6, which includes Duncan Canal, Wrangell Narrows, and portion of Sumner Strait, had the greatest harvest in the fall with 147,000 pounds. This district alone was comprised 26% of the total fall harvest. District 8, which includes the Stikine Flats, had 88,000 pounds. District 2, which includes the lower west shore of Clarence Strait, was third, landing 75,000 pounds, and that area is still open. In terms of effort, District 6 led with 22 permits recording landings during the fall season. District 8 was second with 20 permit holders recording landings, and District 10 was third with 13 permits.
The summer season harvest was over 2 million pounds, putting the total catch at 2.6 million. That's down from the 3.25 million pounds caught last year, and it's the lowest crab catch since the 2000-2001 season. Dungey crab prices increased from the summer on the fall price, averaging $2.43 a pound. That's up more than 50 cents a pound from last year. Several areas remain open for crabbing through the end of February. Meanwhile, the Board of Fish will consider a number of proposals to change Dungeness crabbing when it meets in Petersburg this month. The board will consider proposals to close commercial crabbing in Taku Harbor, Swanson Harbor, and Excursion Inlet near Juneau, along with Helm Bay and Trader's Cove near Ketchikan. There are also proposals to continue summer and fall commercial seasons in Districts 1 and 2 around Ketchikan and Prince of Wales Island, a proposal to reduce pod limits for crabbing around Yakutat, and proposals to close sport crabbing in areas closed to the commercial fleet.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at www.msea.org. or 907-747-3287.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the whole show online anytime at kmxt.org. Every year, young people come to Alaska to make their fortune commercial fishing. However, many of them are woefully underprepared. Many can't handle the conditions at sea or the long hours, or it's just too tough for them. Former fishing boat captain Jonathan Allen has seen good greenhorns and bad during his years in the industry and decided to write a handbook to help the prospective crewman. The Big Buck's Guide to Commercial Fishing in Alaska was the result. It's the subtitle that holds the real story, though: how to run away to Alaska, work harder than you ever thought possible, and perhaps even get paid. Allen, now retired from fishing and living in Idaho, still ships out as a merchant seaman. He started writing the book while waiting for a cod season to begin back in the mid-90s.
So there we were in the middle of the Bering Sea with nothing to do and a week to go till the season started. So I just started writing. I had been knocking around the industry. I'd done some crabbing and some trawling as well. And my crew members were always asking me, what's it like to be on a trawler or on a crab boat? Because, you know, it's grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. So I thought, well, you know what, I'll just write a book about it. I didn't think it was going to be a big book, but just what I knew. And so I started writing, and by the time the season opened, I was about halfway done with it.
The book attempts to do a service for skippers in the industry. Allen does his best to discourage slackers from applying because there are a lot of greenhorns who fail.
I had one guy that decided to go fishing because he wanted to kick heroin. And it was actually really a good system until the third day, and then he just fell to pieces, and it was just a mess. It's a difficult way to make a living. Most of the people who think they want to be fishermen, if they don't have any experience, they really don't understand how difficult it is. And I hesitate to say the number, but an awful lot of them are not successful. It's just too difficult compared to what we do in America to make a living in the beginning of the 21st century.
He encourages prospective deckhands to increase their odds by lining up a job before coming to Alaska.
The capital of Alaskan fishing is actually Seattle, Washington. And so that's where you're going to get most of your jobs, most likely, especially the big factory boats, the factory longliners and the trawlers, the big trawlers. They've got big companies, they've got human resources departments, and so on and so on. And they've all got websites. In fact, in the book, we've got a list of all the websites. And they all hire a little differently. Some of them, you have to actually show up and interview. Others will actually hire you sight unseen. So then the smaller boats that we talk about, which is the salmon boats, there's, you know, thousands of them. And with those boats, you're better off just sending a resume. Put together a real professional-looking package. It doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be better than anybody else sends them.
Allen points out that an inexperienced hand should not expect to make much, if any, money on his first boat. But he says the experience is more valuable than the pay at the beginning of a career.
The best opportunities are never for the new guys unless you're just a really lucky person. And the bad boats, they've always got spots available. And it's kind of, you get on a crummy boat, you don't make too much money, or at least as much as you would on another boat, but you work real hard, you try to learn as much as you possibly can. And really, after one season, you're a veteran and you're not a greenhorn anymore. And then once you've got that first year in, and you've survived, then you'll have a much better chance of getting on with a good boat. Because a good boat, you know, they've got a whole bunch of people that want to get on, and they're not going to take somebody with no experience.
He says having a background in the military or growing up on a farm is ideal experience for a fishing hand. He says those people generally are used to getting up very early and working hard every day. Barring that, having some rope-tying skills could be the difference between getting hired and left on the dock.
Everybody's got to know how to tie a bowline and couple of half hitches and a clove hitch and so on and so on. And it's a nice idea if you can do a little bit of splicing too. So But if you just learn three or four basic knots, you'll be way ahead of the game.
The Big Buck's Guide to Commercial Fishing in Alaska by Jonathan Allen will be published later this winter. Look for my review of the book in Pacific Fishing Magazine next month.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
One of the biggest challenges in recent years in fisheries all around the globe, including Alaska, is the move to privatize the right to fish and to limit how much an individual fisherman can catch. Several fisheries in Alaska have been privatized with both positive and negative results. Kodiak is being used as a case study for some research that was outlined in the most recent Lowell Wakefield Fisheries Symposium in Anchorage. KDLG's Mike Mason has this report.
Courtney Carruthers is an assistant professor with the University of Alaska Fairbanks School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. She says privatizing fishing rights is a relatively new thing in the United States, and it might be making long-term changes to the fishing lifestyle.
I was able to conduct a survey of halibut quota holders as part of my dissertation work and published a little bit of this in the dissertation in 2008. But a strong majority of quota holders, these are only people that hold individual fishing quotas for halibut, they strongly believe that IFQs are changing the fishing lifestyle, and they're changing the social values in fishing, which is a pretty important finding.
Carruthers is in the middle of a two-year project exploring the social and cultural shifts linked to privatization of fishing rights in the Kodiak area. As part of the project, Carruthers has conducted over 50 interviews with Kodiak-based stakeholders in the seafood industry. The preliminary results kept coming back to three themes: hard work, opportunity, and fairness.
So I've heard in Kodiak quite a lot about people that feel disenfranchised from fishing because of IFQs, and you often hear this narrative about fishing used to be about hard work. You didn't need a lot of money. You didn't need a college education. You might need local knowledge to learn how to work the boat and where to catch the fish, but anyone could enter this and make something and sort of build their way up. And now you have to be made. You have to have access to this capital to buy the permits or to buy the quota. And so this, I've heard that narrative a lot, but in the interviews, I'm also starting to hear on the other side, the people that seem to have adopted privatization is a good way to go in saying, well, the people that aren't for IFQs haven't gotten with the program. They're not willing to work hard. They're not willing to learn the new system. They sit around and complain. And so this value of hard work is still very much part of the discourse, even among people that are very pro-privatization. It's this idea of a new kind of work. Yes, you need business skills now. Yes, the fishery is much more capitalized, but you just need to understand that and work hard and you can still succeed.
Carruthers says the theme of opportunity seems to be closely linked with the theme about hard work.
I heard this story from many types of people in Kodiak, the large plant managers to someone who's still running a very small boat operation. I came to Kodiak with no money and a lot of hope, and I made my living here. And so this idea that you could come to a place with not very much and make something of yourself is becoming more narrow.
The other theme that Carruthers says kept coming up during the interviews was about the fairness of the privatization system. Carruthers says the next step in her research project is to develop and distribute a survey to Kodiak stakeholders in the seafood industry in an effort to garner more information about people's views and perceptions about the privatization of fisheries. I'm Mike Mason.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KFSK's Joe Vicnicki in Petersburg and KDLG's Mike Mason in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.